The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. All brought to you by DraftKings. Excuse me, right here at Bar Canada at the D. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Midland, producer number nine. Yeah. So much more than a producer. What's happening?
Not much, man. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Drew Dinsick on the show. We're going to talk NBA with him, tennis. Paul Spohr on baseball. Dan Bespris. Did you book Dan Bespris?
Dan Bespris coming on.
Host of the Old Man Squad Sports Network. Called his thing the Old Man Sports Squad?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Got a whole new podcast network to talk to us about.
Ask him about that.
Yeah.
And then a little later on the show, I don't really necessarily tease stuff that Kelly and I randomly talk about before the show, but I walk in here and American Woman by Lenny Kravitz is playing. And Kelly goes, have we had the Lenny Kravitz talk? And I was like, no, we have not, but maybe we should. That's later. Can't wait for that. We'll talk, obviously, NBA, primarily with Drew here coming up. I wanted to start the show today because sometimes the day before we'll do a show and you and I won't really harp on something while that show is happening or a point that we've made until after the show. We'll be like, you know what, that point needs to be fleshed out more. That was actually a very good point. So Samich and I, remember we had Samich on yesterday, Mike Samich, Samo Bombing from The Handle, weekends here at the network with Matt Brown, noon Eastern, Saturday and Sunday. We were talking about all kinds of sports. When we talked about the NFL, I sort of mentioned, because he said something that triggered this in me, which is, you know, we obviously know where the teams finish in the NFL, first, second, third, or fourth in their division. So we know who their opponents are going to be. And then last week we have the schedule release, which lets us know the sequencing of those teams that teams are playing, their aggregate opponents. And we find out things like the Pittsburgh Steelers, which universally everybody seized on as, oh my God, we've never seen anything like this before, their last eight games of the season specifically. And that should trigger a bet, and it has for all of us on the under, on their season win total. What happened, though, this year, and this is what I was alluding to with Samich yesterday, is the NFL, and this is not something that has gone on for years. This is new this year. Now we have to talk about a third thing, which is that the NFL has completely abandoned any pretense of schedule balance, schedule equity, because their number one priority is great, get the good games on primetime television and let the other stuff fall where it may. Now, I said this to Samich yesterday, and we didn't really harp on it. And as it turns out, our old buddy Warren Sharp, who has been on this show many, many times, we love Warren here, he is the guru of schedule analysis. Would you agree with that, that this is his time of year?
Yeah, absolutely.
No one breaks down a schedule, an NFL schedule, like Warren Sharp.
Yep, him. And then I think, obviously our off-season preview stuff here at VSiN, I think, is always great with everybody that contributes. And Cleve T.A. He breaks down schedules is incredible, too.
Cleve, our buddy Cleve. Who's awesome year round. I would say this is Warren's moment though. And I just want to say this because he's been on the show for a long time, but he goes through a bunch of stuff. And some of this is, we need to harp on this more. And so let's just get to the macro stuff, which is the more general stuff, because he's done this every year, which is net rest edges. So again, based on the schedule release from last week, what are the net rest edges aggregate for the entire year for teams? And what that basically means is, if a team off a Thursday night game is playing 10 days later on a Sunday and they're playing a team that is coming off a Monday night game 6 days earlier than that Sunday, that is a +4 advantage for the team that played on the Thursday and a -4 for the team that played on the Monday. You just add and subtract for the entire season based on that kind of analysis with net rest, total days of extra rest versus a team's opponent over the course of a season. So Baltimore gets the best rest advantage for the season coming up in 2024. They are +16 when you do that exercise. +16. All the way at the bottom is the San Francisco 49ers, who are -21 in net rest disadvantage. Now, Warren does that analysis every year, and we are the beneficiaries of doing it. A lot of us do it on our own as well, but Warren is the first to put it out, and he notes that the 37-game gap, that 37-game delta between the 16-plus for the Ravens and the minus 21 for the Niners is the largest delta in the history of how long he's been analyzing this, certainly since the beginning of the century. Now, think about that. And he actually couched it this way, too, and I think it's fascinating. The NFL season lasts from early September, the regular season, to early January. We're talking about 4 months. That's a 37-day difference. That's more than a month of those 4 months difference between the aggregate edge of the Baltimore Ravens and the San Francisco 49ers. That's kind of mind-blowing. So that's just the first thing. And you're like, okay, well, yeah, but there's been big disparities before. Maybe not 37, but there's been big disparities before. You're right. Okay, but that's just the first salvo.
I mean, is the common denominator, though, I guess, with both of those being so at such different opposite ends of the spectrum, like that is the, it's got to be prime time games, right? Because they're both involved in so many prime time games.
Well, so this is the theme of this. The theme of this is that the NFL continues to prioritize key matchups and big time games for TV revenue. As we'll get to later, there's also 3 games in 10 days, 4 games in 17 days. That is at a rate that has never been seen before. And again, this comes down to, remember, I said this yesterday with Samich, the NFL, as we all know, has this big, had this big, you know, thrust of what they wanted to say was, we are all about player safety. They couldn't give a damn about player safety anymore. They don't care. It's Mike North, as Warren pointed out, the NFL's VP of broadcast planning, gave a talk about, first of all, his job is making the schedule. What a job that is, right? They have basically sacrificed schedule equity for ratings. Here's his quote. We try to maximize viewership. Listen to the order of how he says this.
Okay.
We try to maximize viewership, maximize fan interest, and minimize competitive inequities. It is noteworthy that that's the third thing on his list, because you know what? It is the third thing on his list. And I would argue it's way down. It's not 1, 2, 3. It's 1, 2, drop all the way down to 3. Let's just do some other macro ones. We'll get to specificity in terms of which teams these apply to. But the 2024 NFL schedule features a schedule in which there are 101 games played out of 272. There's 272 total games in the NFL season, Kelly. 101 of them, or 37% of all NFL regular season games this year, features a team with a rest advantage over their opponent. You're like, is that normal? Nope, it's the most in NFL history.
Say, wow, that sounds high.
How about this? There are 66 games played, again, out of 272, 66 games where one team has a 3-plus-day rest advantage over the other. That is also by far the most in NFL history. All right, so now those are some macro stuff. we'll extend this into a segment later after Drew, because there's a lot to get into here. But there is a team, let's start with this. There's a team with 8 games where they have a rest disadvantage. We just went over who that would be. The Niners are minus 21 aggregate, right? They have 8 games out of 17, so nearly half the schedule, right? Basically half the schedule, where they have a rest disadvantage. That's the most games in a season in NFL history for any team ever. And the Niners, if you break them down even further, right, the Niners are this specific off-the-edge anomaly. Week 7, so here's the thing. From week 7 on, the Niners play the NFL's number 4 most difficult schedule, according to Warren, talking about season win totals. But during that span, they're at a rest disadvantage in 6 of those 11 games. Week 7 versus Kansas City. Kansas City's coming off their bye. Week 8 versus Dallas. Dallas is coming off their bye. Week 11 versus Seattle. Seattle's coming off their bye. Week 13 versus Buffalo. Buffalo's coming off their bye.
Jeez.
Week 14 versus Chicago. Chicago coming off a mini bye that week. And then week 18 versus Arizona, when Arizona has extra rest with San Francisco coming off Monday Night Football. So just think about that alone.
There's rest advantages when you're, there's rest advantages when you're talking like Sunday, Monday night football situations. And then there's the whole bye week. Like that's a totally different story, at least in my opinion.
And to have so many of them
in such a short span.
And just to give an idea, because you're like, okay, well, does rest really matter? Like I know we're talking about, does it really matter? Just to give you an idea from last year. Kansas City Chiefs, who, I don't know if you know this, Kelly, they won the Super Bowl. the games where they had a rest deficit of 2+ days, they were 2-3 straight up. They were 1-4 against the spread. All other games that they played, 13-2 outright, 12-3 against the spread.
Yep.
The Niners were 2-2 straight up, 1-3 against the spread when playing with a rest deficit of 2+ days. They were 9-3 in their other 12 regular season games, covering the spread 58% of the time. That's the two best teams in the NFL. Now, what we'll get to later, and we'll name the teams, again, courtesy of Warren, and we'll talk about three games in 10 days, four games in 17 days, which, again, are at an unprecedented rate in this upcoming season, and we will name the teams. But you have 7 games where the opponent has extra time. This year where the opponent has extra time, 6 games. There are 2 teams that have 7 games where the opponent has extra time. We just named one of them, the Niners. Six games where the opponent has extra time. Four teams where the opponent has 6 games where the opponent has extra time. 4 teams apply to that. And then there's a team like the New England Patriots. And I know they're bad at football, and we all expect them to be bad at football, but they have 0 games with a rest disadvantage. Just to give you the disparity in that kind of thing. By the way, the Bengals and the Niners, let's throw the Bengals in there, both must play 3 short-week road games this year. In the last 2 years, teams playing short-week road games have won 43% of the time, while covering the spread just 47.6% of the time. We'll get into more specificity on the scheduling quirks, but again, a nod to Warren Sharp on these, because he did a great job. But this is just sort of based on the comment I made to Samaj yesterday, which is, the NFL don't care anymore. And as bettors, we need to know which teams these apply to and might pull us off bets maybe that we otherwise shouldn't have made earlier. We'll get into that coming up. Drew Dinsick on the other side, NBA next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
For a limited time only, we're offering our annual subscription at an unbeatable price. Normally priced at $240, you can now grab your subscription for just $199. Sign up today. We'll also give you an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of Visa Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use promo code ANG. With Visa Pro, you'll gain instant access to several things. Our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Betting system. Premium analysis, 24/7 video access. I said several things. I meant everything under the sun, betting-wise. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe today to claim your 14 months of VSiN Pro for only $199. Gotta use promo code ANG, though.
ANG like a numbers game, folks.
Ang. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Skill Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlin. By the way, I have every host, every guest on the network, every play that they have in every sport is at VSiN.com/picks. I have 1 in tennis today, and I guess they have rain in Strasbourg, Germany, because this was supposed to be played.
Rain season.
I'm sorry?
It's rain season.
Is it in Strasbourg?
God.
This is supposed to be played at 2 a.m. Our time here, Pacific, but they have yet to take the court. But I'm on Leila Fernandez this morning as a short dog. I got her at plus 113. She's plus 110 right now. She's still playable. I got her as a short dog against Ludmila Samsonova. Should be more coin flippy to me, and maybe even the slightest edge to Leila here. So I got cued by Leila Fernandez, the Canadian, as the play today at Strasbourg. And it should start, at least as the schedule, at least as the timing is here, maybe in the next 20 minutes, but I don't know.
That's what I'm seeing as well.
We'll have to check the weather.
15 minutes. Yeah. 7:30 Pacific time start.
That, of course, is on the run-up to second slam of the year, the clay court slam at Roland Garros in Paris, which begins on Sunday, our time. Drew Dinsick joins us, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at @whale_capper. He is the co-host of the Deep Dive podcast with Andy Molitor and, of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge, which he does with his buddy Jay Croucher as well. He joins us now. How you doing?
Oh, not too bad. Look at my wounds from the NBA weekend, but I think I'm in I think I'm in fair company there. I don't know that a ton of people knew that those two game sevens were going to break that way. And I'm still not sure what happened. We set an all-time record for the offensive efficiency in a game seven by the Pacers, and an all-time comeback by the Timberwolves on the road against the defending champions. I if you had told me the exact results and how they played out of both games the day before, I would have said, you're pulling my leg.
You're pulling my leg. I said to Kelly yesterday, I said, if I came to you before the playoffs and I said, hey, you know what's going to happen? The Nuggets are going to get into a game seven on their home court, of course. They're going to be up 20 in the third quarter, and they're going to gack it. Would you believe me? You couldn't possibly come up with something more outlandish. And they did.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, if you had set it up the other way, I would have said, okay, yeah, you know, you got the more experienced team, you're there on their home court, like, yeah, they have the best player, like, of course they can come back from any deficit. You never count them out, but for the Timberwolves to do it was even crazier. And I don't know. I mean, like, I'm still struggling to kind of put the pieces together of how they did this and how to rate them going forward. I'm not sure if I'm underrating the Timberwolves right now or not. My series price is pretty much spot on for this Mavs T-Wolves series. But, ultimately the way that they were able to, force, you know, Jokic to be a shooter instead of a facilitator was the way that that's how you stop, the Nuggets. And I think just the disciplined rotational defense on the secondary pieces, particularly Aaron Gordon, keeping him from being an offensive playmaker was huge in the second half and in game seven and in totality for Eric Gordon's, kind of muted contributions, surely. But, it was especially weird because, Murray looked fine. He actually played a very good game. And when that happens and, you know, you have Jokic playing 47 minutes, it's unusual to see the offense dry up like that for the Nuggets. I've always kind of been a little suspect of their defense being as good as their rating. And, you know, their defense has always kind of held back their net rating really in the entirety of the Jokic era. And that was surely on display in the second half, but, crazy. They, held the Timberwolves to 38 points in the first half and managed to lose the game seven is still shocking to me.
Yeah. Nuggets, as I mentioned yesterday, after the first three shots they took in the third quarter, went 2 of 13 the rest of the way in that third quarter, 12 of 36 the rest of the way in the game. Maybe if Michael Malone could adjust to the fact that they figured out the two-man game, perhaps between Jokic and Murray, that would have been a start. Where do you stand? You alluded to it. Sounds like you think it's priced correctly. T-Wolves are minus 4, 4-point favorites, I should say, in game one. That is tomorrow night. And the series price on that... you have the T-Wolves at about minus 185 now. So they keep taking money that keeps creeping upwards, plus 160 on the Mavs on the comeback.
Yeah, I would. I'm at Mavs buy point now at 160. My fair is minus 150, plus 150. And I give both of these teams a fair amount of credit for how well they've played on the road this year in the playoffs in particular. I think that's noteworthy. I mean, if you're able to overcome whatever home court advantages still manifest in today's NBA, particularly T-Wolves being able to go into Denver, which is historically the most significant playoff home field, home court advantage and win 3 out of 4 games. You get a ton of credit in terms of just being a road dog. My game prices are 3.5 in Minnesota and I'm Mavericks minus 1.5 in Dallas. That maths out to about minus 150 plus 150. And the idea that this is going to be a short series either way, I would throw a serious objection to. My baseline expectation is most likely this is Timberwolves in 7. Second most likely this is Timberwolves in 5. And then, you get the Mavericks in 6, Mavericks in 7 as your next outcomes. And I think we're in for a pretty exciting series. And I think a lot of what really stands out effectively in what the Timberwolves do. My biggest questions for the series are, Rudy Gobert is able to, be a lockdown, rim defender when asked. But what really kind of makes him special as far as a defender is his ability to do more than that. But he also defend ISO, also defend pick and roll. And I got a funny feeling that this is sort of you take a little bit of his defensive versatility away because you really just, hey, you need to go defend the rim, and we need our other defensive players to be kind of super stoppers on the wings. And that could be a little bit of a tough ask. I think this game one total is probably the at least where I show the biggest edge. I kind of think 206 is absurd. I have, again, turned way down on pace. I've turned down on offensive efficiency because of the playoffs, and I'm still at 211 here for what should be a fair total in game one. And so I think early in this series, I'm going to be playing into these overs. And then hopefully there's a pivot point where, they start to solve each other defensively, and we'll get some late series unders to come through. But I think at price, I'm slightly into the Mavericks. I didn't know that 160s were available. I just assumed I was never going to get my number here, because some of our sharp friends are really into the Mavericks in this series. So yeah. I didn't think this was going to drift. So I'm a little caught by surprise there.
It's not going to be a short series. Over 5.5 games is, I'm seeing, as high as minus 197 shop around. Would you play that?
No, I don't think so, actually. Let me pull up my number exactly, but I think I'm at minus 160 there for... you said one, minus 190?
Well, that's what I'm looking at right now, but you got to shop around, obviously.
That's what the fair is? Yeah. No, that's pretty close to what my fair is. Let me pull up the exact calc I got for you here. But, the fact that both of these teams can win on the road may make it a little bit more chaotic, right? Playing into... the zigzag of, road team wins and then is, incredibly favorably priced the next time out at home is probably going to be an interesting way to attack this one. But my Minnesota Mavericks over 5.5 price is actually, it's only minus 150. So I'm not there.
Okay.
I do think it's still going to be a pretty lengthy series, but
Pacers
for me.
I'm sorry. Finish your thought. Go ahead.
I'm kind of out of the land big old prices game in the playoffs, the way that my performance has gone.
So there's a little of that, like that little sentiment that you had at the end, though. I think that's pretty representative of a lot of people after what just happened, where I think a lot of people, maybe they're not verbalizing it this way. I think there's the first words out of my mouth on the show yesterday is like, it's okay to say, I may not know anything anymore. Like in this NBA playoffs, I may not know anything anymore if I knew anything to begin with, right? Because I was so all about the Nuggets. By the way, we'll talk Pacers Celtics on the other side, because that's game one tonight in the Eastern Conference. I feel like I am one of the few who give the Pacers a puncher's chance here. Do you at all?
I do not. My series price is not close to 900.
Really?
It is much, much higher.
Okay.
My fair price in Boston is Celtics minus 13. I'm not even really accounting for the return of Porzingis. I'm assuming he will come back in the series at some point, but I have the Celtics as meaningfully better.
The assumption is game three, but you know how assumptions go. Yeah. Makes you regret things that you thought earlier, Kelly. We'll talk about that. We'll flesh that out. See if Drew's playing anything in tennis today. French Open thoughts and beyond. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. Coming back.
The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on Visa.
Hour number two of a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. Visa.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you're taking us in this morning, we appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin, everybody, live from Barcanada, the barrage here at the D. Still to come this hour, Paul Sporer on baseball. Dan Bespris talks some NBA playoffs with us. Best audio in the biz. Just because he's started his own network doesn't mean his audio is any worse, right? Still great.
I would assume not.
I would assume so. Okay. Real quick, let's get to some tweets here. And I want to finish that conversation about the NFL schedule, because I think you asked the right question at the end there. This is from B. Morianen. Not quite as unknown. We get tweets, by the way, beating the book. Always appreciate it. Not quite as unknown, but equally mesmerizing as Mike Tomlin never having a losing season. You may not have heard, oh, this is great, the announcers for the Edmonton-Vancouver game wanted everyone to know the Canucks only had two Canadian-born players every other minute. I did catch that. I watched that game last night.
Okay, I had it on a TV. Yeah. I don't think I had the audio on for more than 4 minutes. I didn't know that. I'm impressed. I'm the audience member who's glad they brought up that stat. That's amazing. I didn't know that.
John Buchagras on the call. He's great.
They really bring it up that many times.
according to Brian.
That's great.
Mike Stacks, with the NFL and teams' rest advantages or disadvantages, it seems like Survivor will have plenty of upsets, and this could be one of the hardest years ever for Circa Survivor. It'll certainly have upsets. It does every year, but you're right. Maybe so. Maybe that will even make it harder than ever. And then New York Mets 18. Gil, I did not hear you mention Jets for 3 games in 10 days, which is how they start the season, aside from the 4-17, which you did mention they have in October. My apologies. Jets are part of that as well. So, I mean, there's all these kinds of quirks, and you asked the right question. We'll wrap this up by saying this because I don't want to belabor it anymore, but you asked the right question, which is, okay, and I've tried to, as we're, you know, this is a kind of thing where you should have it color-coded, right, or you should know, yep, circled when these anomalies, and they're less and less of an anomaly was the point that we're making, but when these circumstances happen in the NFL schedule, because it is something you should know for your handicapping. Now, is it the end-all, be-all? It is not. It is one thing of many. It always is. If it were that easy, we'd all be rich off this stuff, and it would be easy peasy, and, you know, we'd all go, what's the Kent Beatrice in D.C. used to say? We'd all go live on an island with a tropical drink. But it's not that easy. It's just one element. And so you made a great point off air, which is how do you on air, you said, does it affect your futures bets? I think the point you made off air was the even better one, which is for you. And I think this applies to most people. And I think it does for me, too. It's more the week to week where it comes up for me. Because do I regret my Bengals plus 175 to win the AFC North? I don't, because I still think the Bengals are good enough in the collective of 17 games,
correct,
to overcome such a thing, right? Now, it's not like as beautiful as a 162-game baseball schedule, where the reason I love to make baseball season wins is because if your handicap is right, you will overcome negative variance. Obviously, with 17 games, your margin,
it's a little tighter. Yeah,
your,
it's tight.
Your margin is much thinner. But no, I think you're right. I think it applies more in season for me.
Yeah, I think it definitely does for me. And as like you're talking about, I don't want this point to get lost. Like, because this is definitely, I go into the season for both season prep work of looking at win totals and futures before we go into the season. You're gathering all this information, right? And then you're making sure to save it and highlight things week to week that you need to be aware of throughout the season from that preseason homework, like we're talking about right now. I think you made the point of some of this stuff would more likely bring me off making a bet than lead me to making one in a win total situation or something like that before the season. But it's definitely stuff you got to be aware of week to week. And as I'm like talking now, I'm realizing this is also, I guess, very similar to how I approach the NBA. So, you know, the rest situations are something you take advantage of often,
right,
throughout the course of the season, but you're not really adding those up before the season.
Right. And those, I think, are like, this is definitely newish.
Yeah, right? Correct. Because you keep adding more Thursdays and, you know, right, prime time standalone games.
That's the difference, right? In the NBA, everybody knows when those 4 and 7 days or whatever it is come up, right? Oh, they're playing a back-to-back 4 and 6 days or whatever. It's getting worse. Like, these schedules are getting worse in terms of the inequity. And so that's just the point of all this. And again, a shout-out to our buddy Warren on that. Can we do – we're going to have Spore on baseball later.
And I'd I'd like to say, like, okay, the Christmas stuff is going to be more of a one-off and it will come back down. But I can't say that when they're going out and adding different media partners every year. I mean, the more media partners you add, they're going to want their own primetime game or their own slot, creates more of these situations.
You are beholden to them. If Netflix is paying you $250 million or whatever that number is, I believe it's $250 million. They have a right, right?
Yeah.
They don't want, I'll use my commandeers, they don't want Washington
right
playing Carolina that night.
Yeah, I'm not buying the Jaguars season package, you know what I mean? No, like, I want a primetime game with good teams.
Little Guardians update, because it is May 21st. Look at this, Kelly. Guardians handicap, Guardians win last night. They beat the Mets 3-1. Little interleague action in Cleveland. Start a series with the Mets. By the way, I'm betting the Guardians on a nightly basis with these, and it's,
are you serious?
They make you so much money. It has nothing to do with the overall bet. Right. The overall bet this month on the Guardians, remember, we lost the 65-1 in dramatic fashion, to say the least. This year, this month, it was 16-1. I went right back to the Guardians well because the schedule absolutely, from my handicap, dictated that I should. And here are the Guardians. They're in fifth place right now. They're 12-7. And they got 9 ball games left. By the way, those are the games left in the month on the right-hand side. I did it at Circa. The only other shop that had it was William Hill Caesars. Circa has a tiebreaker of fewest wins if you end up with the most wins, followed by run differential. At William Hill Caesars, it is a dead heat situation. Yankees lost last night. That was the sort of bigger development. Yankees were up on the Mariners 4-1 in the ninth, and Clay Holmes gacked it for the Yankees. And I was going nuts by myself. Just like, yes! It also occurred to me that even if there was an audience there, they would wonder, why are you so happy about this mid-May result? Don't ask.
Oh, yeah. That was me at the bar celebrating when Jaden Daniels went number two, and everybody's like, you a Commanders fan? And I'm like, no.
No.
Like, what town am I in? How do people not have bets on these things?
I thought when I was rooting on April 30th, the Magic girl was like, oh, you're just rooting on your team. When I scared her, I was like, yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Phillies, Dodgers, Yankees, though, all have 14 wins. Phillies are at the top. Phillies won March, April. Remember that. They won that with 20 wins. Everybody else, like the Guardians at 19. Phillies are in first place right now, 14-3. Dodgers and Yankees also have 14 wins. And then it's the Royals and our Guardians at 12 wins. So again, as well as the Guardians are doing, and again, the schedule gets easier as the month goes. They're going to have a lot more wins here. But will it be enough to topple the Phillies, Dodgers, and Yankees, who just refuse to lose baseball games? And even when the Yankees did yesterday, it was in the most dramatic of fashion. So that's where we stand right there. We're going to have guests coming up. Do you want to have the Lenny Kravitz conversation real quick here before?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, we have to have this because Kelly and I have to purge this from our... So I arrive here. We always talk about random things. Yesterday it was EDC. Today it was... Kelly goes, did we have this conversation about Lenny Kravitz? Because American Woman was playing here. And I said, no, we didn't. But I've had, I think, what you're about. Tell me. So tell everybody what you said.
Why is Lenny Kravitz so famous?
Okay.
So, I mean, that's the basic. That's the basis.
You pondered this on your own.
Yeah, I was in the car running errands like a couple weeks ago. Another, you know, a song came on, and I don't know if it was American Woman, Fly Away, whatever. And I'm on the phone with a friend, and I brought it up, and I'm like, by the way, like, why is Lenny Kravitz so famous? Is this like, is he, I know he's like, he's a very good-looking dude who's been around for a while. Like, I know that's a part of it. But, like, is that all of it? What is the answer? So I don't know. It drives me nuts.
Independently, I had gone to a Lenny Kravitz show here at the Chelsea, at the Cosmo, about 4 years ago, my buddy Tommy, my buddy Ray. And after the show, we spent at least an hour on this very subject. We're like, all right, that was great and everything. Where does he fit in the American cultural tapestry? How did he get to be so famous? Because when we went through this off on a break, I can name you 8 Lenny Kravitz songs, and then it falls off a cliff. So he's done just enough.
And I'm shocked you can name that many.
Yeah, I can name 8. And you could name 8 if you heard him, too. You'd be like, oh, yeah, I know that song. But it's not 18.
Right.
It's 8. And so he's done just enough over time, and he has a look. Now, Drew Dinsick, we talked to Drew Dinsick about this off-air.
And this is fair to bring up.
Drew's theory was that he was, when he was younger, he came to the prominence at a time where it was like he was like the Prince alternative.
It's like taking over for Prince.
Prince might have been a little too weird for some, but Lenny Kravitz was more palatable for some.
Yeah.
That's one theory.
It makes sense. I get it.
Also, by the way, had a famous mom who was on the Jeffersons, Roxy Roker, had a famous wife, the beautiful Lisa Bonet, no longer married, and a daughter, Zoe Kravitz, who's famous. So he comes from a famous family.
Right. There's like that kind of American history family there.
Right.
I know he's done some acting. I feel like everybody's going to tweet at us like these one little things.
Here's the right.
But like, but when you combine all of that together.
It's fascinating. How
it's fascinating
become?
To me. Yes.
Yes.
Like, I understand everything combined. It is a fair amount, but I still don't understand why he's that famous.
Let me conclude it this way. Who dislikes Lenny Kravitz? Nobody.
Good. That's a great point.
Nobody.
A great point.
There is no negative reaction to Lenny Kravitz. There is no one sitting out there right now. We're about to find out, I guess. But my guess is that there's nobody out there going, I hate that guy.
Well, and Drew brought up how he was in Hunger Games yeah, about how that how he thought that spread it to the new generation.
I don't buy that. Yeah, I don't buy that either.
Like, I think he got a gig like that because he was already famous for some reason I don't understand.
But he's just, there's a few others like this, right? Like Sade. How is she so huge to one demographic but unknown to another? Neil Diamond in the other direction, right? Like, yep. Half of society knows him, but the other half doesn't even know who he is. It's fascinating stuff. We'll come back. Paul Spohr, coming up.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're getting close to crowning an NBA champ, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings, listen up to this. New customers, that's new customers, get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it does not hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSiN, the crown is yours. Gil Alexander, we get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Jason H11, if Lenny Kravitz called a sushi place, could he get a reservation? Yes. Yes, he could. Jeff Holdorf, Lenny Kravitz, meh. Clearly no Barry Manilow. Now there is a cult. Barry Manilow's in town, Kelly.
Yeah, but like that's another one. It's got the answer.
By the way, have you seen Manilow in concert?
No.
You gots to go. It's a gots to go situation.
Where's he at? Westgate?
Westgate. Gots okay. to go.
He's always there, right?
I would know. Robert Busa, African-American rocks are great. Remember Living Color, awesome band. Can you name one rocker or group that wasn't great? That's a different story. Coach Brian wants to know if we're going to talk some college baseball conference tournament games this week. Yeah, we'll get let's get Grissom on here.
Yeah.
Talk some of that. James Lloyd, the worldwide leader, got to the Lake Show finally. All we need is a cowboy talk to complete the bingo card. And Shine the Professor chiming in. There's one guy who probably does not like Lenny Kravitz, Terrence Trent D'Arby. Oh, I like this. Both were princish alternatives, but TTD was far superior but couldn't follow up his great debut. Kravitz slid in, the rest is history. That's an interesting theory. Are you at your tender age of 17 years old, Kelly, do you remember Terrence Trent D'Arby?
Not at all.
Sign Your Name, Wishing Well. He was a monster. Like, there was a moment in time where people thought this guy was going to be the next Prince.
What are we talking, like 1991?
Correct. Exactly, I think, 1991. Somewhere around there, or late 80s, maybe. Late 80s, early 90s, I can't remember exactly the year. But he ended up changing his name, by the way, to Sananda Maitreya. And he actually had some great jams that way, but they were so obscure that no one even...
Yeah, I don't even know who that is.
Oh, he was a phenomenal talent. It's an interesting theory. Ladies and gentlemen, this is always a monster day when we're able to book the great Dan Bespris on the show, because that means his kids are behaving. Dan Bespris joins us, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. And Dan, first of all, I want to say hello, but I look at your byline now and it says founder and host of the Old Man Squad Sports Network. And of course, you can follow Dan at Dan Bespris, B-E-S-B-R-I-S. What happened?
Well, you know, I got tired, honestly, Gil, of you asking how long I was going to be the assistant GM at my previous job.
That's sports ethos, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
This is just an opportunity for me to go do something on my own. I thought it would be a lot of fun. So far, it really has been. A lot of folks have reached out to be a part of it. It's just an opportunity for me to focus on broadcasting, podcasting, that side of an operation, which is always kind of, has been my passion.
Yes.
And so now I can just yell into the ether for a few extra hours every day, because what could go wrong with that, right?
More broadcasting from Dan Bespris makes for a better broadcasting world. I really mean that, man. I'm glad to hear that about you. Okay. That said, you have been watching the NBA. Were you as stunned by the results this past Sunday as everybody else?
The Minnesota and Denver game, yes. The Indy-New York game, not as much. I mean, New York was down, the entire starting lineup by the end of that? The war of attrition was lost. I was, frankly, pretty impressed that the Knicks continued fighting as long as they did. They simply had to play their five best guys 48 minutes every ball game, and you kind of knew that eventually that was going to catch up to them. You hoped it wouldn't be so soon, I guess, but that one, not so surprising. Minnesota winning in Denver on the road with a second half altitude comeback. That was very impressive. And I wish that I could say that I saw that coming, because then I'd be the damn smartest person in the room. But I did not. But you may recall that before the season started, I did come on this show and say that I liked Minnesota a lot more. I also said I didn't think the Thunder were as good as they were, so I got to take the hit on that one. But I was pretty high on the Wolves at the start of the season, and this still way, way better than I could have ever expected.
All right, let's start with these exactas. Kelly, I want you to chime in as well. These are the eight combinations. We'll do it from long shot to short shot. Pacers to beat the Mavericks, 55-1. Pacers to beat the T-Wolves, 45-1. Mavs to beat the Pacers, 25-1. T-Wolves to beat the Pacers, 15-1. Now we get to the shorter ones. Mavs to beat the Celtics, plus 750. T-Wolves to beat the Celtics, plus 370. And Celtics to beat the Mavs, plus 240. And the shortest of them all, Celtics to beat the T-Wolves, plus 150. Give me your best one, Dan. If you had to bet one, what would you bet?
Oof, that's a tough one. How about Celtics to beat the Mavs at plus 240? I can't see the Pacers beating the Celtics, so I've just wiped those off the bingo card here. Assuming I put the Celtics in the finals, then you're looking at just the top four, which I know is not as exciting as the bottom four. And then you're thinking, okay, can anybody beat the Celtics? I guess you could take Wolves to beat the Celtics at plus 370 is kind of like the second choice there. So option two and option three on the board are the two that I would look at if you're ignoring. Can you call it chalk at plus 150? I guess that's, I don't know. I'm trying not to pick the favorite of them. Is that fair?
No, that's fair. I do have the Pacers in seven. I made a long shot bet on that in this series. But I would say T-Wolves to beat the Celtics, plus 370. Kelly, yeah. By D-L-O-N, what do you got?
Yeah, one of those two. I hope it's the Mavericks and Celtics, though, because I got the Mavericks bets. So
you'll take Mavericks to beat anybody.
Yes, I would. Yes, okay. I'll take Mavericks to beat anybody.
You said you don't. It sounded like you don't give the Pacers a shot here at all. Is there any bet?
I can't. I like the Pacers. Just sort of like the only way you're hoping they go through. And Gil, I know you said in seven is if the Celtics do a Celtics thing and kind of take their foot off the gas for too long. I just can't see that happening against a team that's not as gritty as the kind of clubs that can exploit that with Boston. Now, Porzingis being out is a factor, but I still think the Celtics could overcome that. Plus, the Pacers just went seven. You've got that thing looming over it, and I'm trying not to go too far on tangential thoughts here.
Would you lay 10 on the Celtics tonight, or would you stay away from that as well?
Probably a stay away. I'm probably more inclined to look at Dallas in game one if you're going to sort of fade a team coming off of game seven.
So Dallas plus the points, you like.
That one of the two game ones, if I'm looking to try to take a position against a team that went seven, I'd prefer Mavericks over Pacers in game one. Celtics, in game one. Just because laying 10 is a truckload in the playoffs in particular.
Do you like the Mavericks in that series against the T-Wolves, or you still like the T-Wolves?
See, now that's where I spent like 35 minutes last night stewing in bed, my heart racing, because I was like, I know we're going to talk about this on the show tomorrow, and I don't have a strong opinion on it. Finally, I ultimately fell asleep because life was very exhausting. Yes, I think I still lean Timberwolves for the series, even though I think the Mavericks have a really good shot to get game one or at least keep it real tight. I just think the Wolves, from a matchup standpoint, I didn't know the Wolves had the horses to match up with Denver as well as they did defensively. I think the Mavericks pose different challenges, but, and I hate to say this word, but I think from a defensive standpoint, they're slightly easier challenges just because of the way their offense operates. There are fewer things to think about when you're guarding the Mavericks as opposed to guarding the Nuggets. And yeah, you know, this is a little bit of a remedial way to handicap it, but if the Wolves can appropriately strategize for a Jokic-led offense, I think they can do it for a Luka-led offense as well.
I think that is very well said, and that is why I believe that last series, and I said it during the series, the Nuggets-T-Wolves, to me, was the NBA Finals. And I really think the Timberwolves, the reason to me that the Celtics are the short shot is because they play the Pacers, right?
And yes,
because
absolutely.
That's why it's not because they're better than the T-Wolves. If you put them out on the court as currently constituted, Porzingis obviously changes that. But I agree with what you said. To me, this ought to be, and obviously Luka's going to have a say in this. Luka and Kyrie will both have a say in this, but this ought to be at least when you look at it that way, an easier proposition. Now, easier said than done, obviously, because basketball is basketball, but I like where you're thinking on that anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if Luka gets nuts, then anything is possible, and he has been known to do that from time to time. But I'm just thinking from a game planning standpoint, he's a wizard passing wise, but they don't move the way that the Nuggets do. And the Wolves somehow, I have no idea how they did it, game planned for the Nuggets, and they ran it and they were effective and they shut them down. I like the stat that the Nuggets scored under 100 points a dozen times all year, and half of those were against the Wolves. I thought said everything about how good defensively Minnesota is. So yes, I still think they win the series, even if I think game one, probably the hardest game for them. The way they sneak by is because the Mavs have actually been historically bad in game ones under Jason Kidd. So, hey, you know, the scales of justice, but you guys know me. I like to look for opportunities to fade teams off a 7-game series, and that would be the side I look of the two remaining.
I'm with Dan for game one, though. I think that's – I like Mavericks game one. I think they've got – that's their best shot to win one in Minnesota.
You shall see. That is tomorrow night, Pacers and Celtics game one tonight. Dano, founder and host of the Old Man Squad Sports Network, his new podcast network. Congrats, man. Looking forward to it.
Thank you, guys.
At Dan Bespris for all the information there. Go join Golic next on radio. Best Bets next on the TV side. Enjoy from Visa, the Sports Betting Network.